If that happens, Turkey pulls out, you're going to see that just one by one, other nations saying, we want to pull out. And again, even under that scenario, you're not looking at a NATO that's going to sit back and say, okay, we should have been dissolved 20 years ago, but maybe this is the time to get dissolved. That's not going to happen. You're still looking at a confrontation.
You're listening to the Corbett Report.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Spiro with NewsBud. There have been some significant developments reported by the media, including RT, of further escalation between the United States and Turkey. A Turkish foreign minister recently stated that Turkey and Russia would look to establish a joint military, intelligence, and diplomatic mechanism, while adding that relations with NATO were not as satisfactory as he would have wished. Meanwhile, Senator Viktor Ozerov, a member of Russia's Federation Council Defense and Security Committee, has come out and said Turkey can provide the Incirlik base to the Russian aerospace forces for its use in counterterrorism operations in Syria. This can become a logical continuation of Turkish President Erdogan's step toward Russia. Now, Incirlik Air Base, which is currently used by NATO and is home to around 50 U.S. nuclear warheads, Ozerov went on to say that such a decision would be regarded as Turkey's real readiness to cooperate with Russia in the fight against terrorism in Syria and not just pay lip service. Now, Russia and NATO have been at odds over a number of issues, including Syria and Ukraine, and this would be very controversial to say the least if Russia did get access to Incirlik Air Base. Today, we have two experts who have been providing reports and analysis on Turkey, even predicting the recent failed coup attempt in Turkey, Sibel Edmonds and James Corbett. Now, James, let's start with you. Does this growing rift between Turkey, the U.S., and NATO come as a surprise? And will Turkey pull out of NATO, or are they bluffing?
Well, not only does it not come as a surprise, it's something that I actually explicitly talked about in my interview on X22 a few weeks ago, analyzing what's going on with Turkey in the post-coup environment. I said that this it looks like they're inching out away from the NATO umbrella and into Russia's arms. And obviously, we've seen that developing with the handshake in St. Petersburg between Erdogan and Putin, and promising to dust everything under the rug and start afresh. Obviously, that was a huge development. This is 10 times more of a development, because military cooperation between a NATO member and a NATO foe, the biggest external threat to NATO, or so they like to say, is a pretty substantial development. And this is coming indirectly at this point, so I guess this, we're still in the realm of diplomacy and sort of back and forth at this point. It isn't some sort of official policy that Turkey's coming out and trumpeting, but the fact that this is even being discussed is phenomenally important, I think, because what it indicates is that clearly Turkey is at an inflection point in its relationship with NATO. And I think the writing is on the wall for Erdogan specifically and his government, that NATO, to whatever extent they were directly involved in the coup, and I think there's quite a lot of evidence for that, but even if they weren't directly involved in the coup, the point is they are the ones supporting the coup faction and the ones that are being removed from the Turkish government right now. So Erdogan understands this. He's not stupid, and he knows just how important the relationship with Russia could be in the future. What I find extremely important about this is that Turkey really is a game changer in the geopolitical sense, in the balance of power that's going on between NATO and Russia. Look at it geographically. It's, of course, the Bosporus Strait continues to be geographically important, but also the literal bridge between Europe and the Middle East, but also the cultural and political bridge and a NATO bulwark against Russia and Chinese and Iranian power in that region. For that to detach from NATO and go on to that Russia-China-Iran axis really does create a game-changing political axis in that region and further isolates the NATO interests, pockets of interest in that region. Afghanistan becomes even more isolated. They've got Pakistan, obviously a U.S. military cooperator, but surrounded by China and Iran and all of these hostile territories. I mean, it truly does change things for Turkey to be shifting away from NATO right now. So even though this isn't an official position that they're coming out and announcing in an official diplomatic sense at this point, for it even to be discussed in an open forum like this is, I think, pretty game-changing. That's my analysis. I'm looking forward to what Sibel has to say about this, and whether you think this is... No, I wouldn't say bluff. I don't think bluff could be the right word here. But whether it could be being floated in this manner to try to position a better relationship with NATO, or is there any going back from this point? I mean, can you turn back somehow into the NATO fold after going this far out from under the umbrella?
Thank you, James. And you made some excellent points there, especially in regards to Turkey's importance geopolitically. I mean, look at the borders. Turkey shares borders with Iraq, with Syria, with Iran. So you are looking at one of the most, if not the most geopolitically important country in the world. And I can confidently say that. And throughout the history, Turkey has always been the prize, you know, Constantinople's time. It is the gateway. And this is, I would say, we have never had anything like this since they put together NATO half a century ago. This is the first time we are seeing such phenomena here. And it is, I can't tell you how important it is. I know we were talking about Brexit or some of the nations wanting to get out of EU, but compared to that, this is massive. And I don't think they are bluffing Turkey. And I believe we are reaching that point of no return. And I believe U.S. in this particular case has been the main responsible party. And both before the coup, because this coup was a failed coup attempt, was implemented, decided upon by U.S., NATO, CIA, together with the network of Fethullah Gulen. But since that failed attempt coup, U.S. has been going around and acting, flexing muscles, saying, so what? Even if you were to prove it, Turkey, so what? In such an arrogant manner and belittling the sovereignty of Turkey. And of course, with its media and U.S. media, U.S. deep state, including Gladio, media platform is what we see in mainstream media and pseudo-alternative media, NBC, Fox, CNN. They have been all part of the same choir. In fact, you do not see any differences in reporting among these mainstream media outlets. Just this one case we had with NBC. In the past, because I worked for the FBI, and there were diplomatic communication involved that were being monitored, if a newspaper, I'll give you a real example, New York Times would have someone writing an article that was slightly critical of Turkey. This is year 2000, okay? And I know the reporter's name, the journalist's name. Immediately, Turkish embassy would call the State Department, and State Department would bend over and say, we'll make sure there will be a much, much more positive for you article will be out there. In fact, we'll write it and we'll send it to New York Times. And this reporter under his name will publish it. You know why? Because of Turkey's importance. Okay, we want to keep this diplomatic relations in intact, right? In this case with NBC, that was what I was expecting. I was expecting pressure from State Department on NBC saying, don't let this escalate. We are looking at Turkey and this post-failed coup attempt. Just go and issue apology and let's just finish this thing. They didn't, meaning they can't do anything. So this is what they carried. And it was like, who's going to blink first? Well, Turkey hasn't been blinking and it's not about to blink. And Turkey is about to do what it says it's going to do in terms of saying, what is my advantage, Turkey? Having NATO base in my country and being a NATO ally, because with allies like this, the United States and NATO, who needs enemies? They are concocting a coup against the democratically elected government, whether we like that government or not. It's nobody's business. You know, it's their business. They have elected President Erdogan. And this is the arrogance they are displaying. So it's time to end it. And they have people, they have nations to become allied with, and in this case, Russia. And if you remember, James, when you and I talked about this case and I predicted the coup, I said President Erdogan has been really, really stepping on the nerves of the West. First of all, in certain arms deal, he said, well, China is giving us a better deal, okay? Better quality, lower price in a particular weapon sales. So why, as a nation, it's our right to go with more economically feasible weapons, right? And we buy from China. This was a no-no in NATO's book. No NATO ally has ever done it. No NATO allies will ever dare doing. So that was daring. Then it was President Erdogan talking about joining Shanghai Organization. That was again. So he started, really setting his foot on the nerves of CIA, NATO, especially United States. And so this coup attempt was in response to all these darings that President Erdogan was engaged in. And of course, some of the tough talk with Israel. Of course, we know a lot of it was talk. But still, I have a video that's going to come out in the next 2-3 days. And I think anybody outside Turkey who would watch it, they would understand how they turned this man, President Erdogan, to the angel, to the most amazing leader in the world for 8-10 years. And how almost overnight, those adjectives change into despot and the dictator. And when people see this in footage, they're going to understand that nobody overnight goes from an angel into this devil thing. So back to your point, it's extremely important. I don't think Turkey is bluffing, and I don't believe Russia is bluffing. But right now, I'm kind of undetermined on Russia. But we are looking at a situation that can bring about some enormous worldwide change, and it may have domino effect, and that domino effect can be good, but it can also be disastrous. Okay, the domino effect is, as the first nation ever in the history, if Turkey were to pull this off and go ahead and does this thing, right, pulls out of NATO and say F you, enough is enough. First of all, why NATO is around? No, nobody can really justify its existence. Once that happens, you are going to see domino effect. You're going to see all the other nations in the Balkans start saying, hold on a second, why don't we do it? Because there is this discontent in the Balkans, okay? They don't want the public, the people, they do not want NATO. They don't want to be part of the NATO. And it has been forced upon them. It's been basically, nobody wanted to be the first. And considering their past relationship with Russia and the history they have had, when Turkey does this, you are going to see the Eastern Bloc, including Greece, falling down like dominoes, because Greece has been threatening, kind of not in this strong manner as Turkey has been doing. And United States cannot and will not let this happen. And now we're going to talk about what are the things that U.S. can and will most likely do. Because there are not many options. There are only 2 or 3. And as I said, some good outcomes may be seen, but I'm afraid we may be looking at World War III.
Greece and Turkey together at last with Russia. I mean, politics makes for strange bedfellows, but what you're saying is all very plausible. Here's the one part of this equation that doesn't make sense to me. Obviously, if Turkey opens Incirlik up to Russian air force, I mean, that's clearly a game changer. NATO can't abide by that. But why would Turkey, I get the bigger part of what's going on here, and that their bread is clearly more buttered on the China and Russia side and Iran than they would be with NATO, but in Syria specifically, clearly Turkey has been there since the start, has been an integral player in the foreign intervention that is commonly known as the internal dissension of Syria, and clearly on a different side than what Russia has been on. Russia clearly in support of PYD. Erdogan thinks PYD is basically PKK. They have very, very, very different interests and outcome goals in Syria. But now we have some Turkish officials at least floating the idea that there's no way to peace in Syria without Russian cooperation of some sort. I mean, this is getting very strange. It seems to me that part of this would have to be some sort of about-face in Turkish position on what's happening in Syria. And interestingly enough, Al Monitor has a story up, for whatever it's worth, that apparently this Ismail Haki Pekin, who was a former military intelligence leader in Turkey, I believe, back in 2007, 2011, that time range, is apparently starting some back-channel diplomacy between Ankara and Damascus. What on earth is going on here?
You made an excellent point, and I'm so glad you brought up this incredibly important point, because a lot of our viewers have been asking this thing, or they've been trying, but President Erdogan has been supporting ISIS and the stuff against Assad. Well, because most people, we don't have mainstream media's reach, they did not watch our video series when we were actually breaking the story of Jordan and Turkey being NATO's Operation Gladius training base against Assad. This was before Syria became headlines. Remember that, Corbett? We reported on this, right? And so what happened was, because Assad and Erdogan had great relationship, Syria and Turkey had a pretty good relationship right before this whole Syria tension business. What happened? This was concocted by the U.S. after Libya, that we were going to do this with Syria, okay? And this is during the time when Turkey, including President Erdogan, kind of bowed to United States NATO wishes, okay? So this whole thing was forced upon Turkey's throat, basically, that no, you're going to say how evil is Assad, and you are going to, because look at Turkey's border with Syria, be the main actor, the pawn in implementing what we're going to do against Syria, bringing in those freedom fighters and training them and smuggling them in, arming them. Turkey, of course, being used to bowing, they did that despite the fact that this put President Erdogan and Turkey in a very difficult position. Initially, if you remember, James, public opinion was one Muslim nation against another Muslim nation. We don't want, they are our brothers. And they were showing the pictures of President Erdogan with Bashar Assad. They are holding hands. They are saying they are brothers. Just like this thing, making Erdogan from angel into devil evil overnight, that happened between Turkey and Syria. And even people in Turkey, they were flabbergasted. Like, we haven't had problem with Syria. What is going on? They put Erdogan, this is the United States and NATO, in this position. And then the stuff with Ukraine started happening, okay? The whole uprising in Ukraine. And at that point, Obama administration put the Syria thing in the back burner, right? Then they left Turkey there to pick up the pieces. You have flocks, all these millions of refugees coming to Turkey. Turkey already had, at that point, had gained the reputation of the lead nation implementing the stuff against Assad, being even louder about it than the United States. And what could he do? President Erdogan, this really pissed off the administration of President Erdogan. It's like, you set us up. You said you go in the front, okay? We're going to do all the backing. And now with Ukraine and with some of the compromising that you're doing on the side with the darn Russians, you are letting us left here basically exposed. From that point on, it's been just, they had to go with the flow. Okay, but to start with, they didn't want this with Syria. President Erdogan had a good relationship, very good relationship with Bashar Assad. So now this makes sense, because we know that Russia has been the biggest protector of Syria up until this point. Otherwise, we would have seen another Libya case, as we saw with Libya, with Syria. The only reason we haven't gone and invaded that is just because of Russia. So they're cozying up to Russia and saying, you know what, let's forget down in your planes and everything, and we'll give you things. We want to be on your side, because this side has been screwing us, okay, big time. And of course, it's natural, as part of that, they will go ahead and reestablish this bridge with Bashar Assad and saying, you know what, we are no longer playing, you know, with the other team. We have changed. We have switched team. And it makes complete sense. And I won't be surprised at all if this gets to be stated officially in the next week or so that Erdogan, President Erdogan, is reaching out to. And of course, we know Russians would behind the scenes play this thing and saying, okay, everybody saves face. So what? People change teams all the time. Greeks and Turks are going to kiss and make up. We're going to have Assad forgiving all the horrifying things that has happened between Turkey and Syria in the past 3 years. Turkey playing the major role. Russia being happy. It would make sense for it to happen. So even though it seems really weird and unusual, it doesn't make sense. When you look at it from the geopolitical sense and how people change sides and teams, it makes perfect sense, because this whole thing was not started with Turkey. Everything with Syria was per order of NATO, and and the same thing, Jordan would never do that with Syria. Who do you think is training? Who do you think is ordering Jordan to do that? And one last thing in this case, in 1980 coup, Turkey was a different country. Okay, I mean, this was during the Soviet Union era, etc. But Turkey was neutered, you know, it was neutered. It was up to here in debt with IMF. You know how they do it. They turn nations to slaves. We are the bosses. We are the bullies. You're going to listen to us. IMF and World Bank and being part of NATO had left this neutered country like we see. I think many countries we see today, NATO allies, and I call them neutered nations. They are neutered, okay? And today, Turkey is not in this position. It's in a much better position. I'm not saying it's in a perfect position. It has leverages available to it, Turkey, that it did not have in 1980. So, and with this move, with this particular time right now, the turning point we are in with NATO, which I applaud. I would love to shout out and say, the trend should be followed by Greece, by the rest of the countries, the NATO slaves. They need to get out. And if they see one does it and gets away with it, which is going to be very unlikely, I think we're going to see the domino effect. And this is why I'm telling you, we are going to see big time escalation. No way on this planet U.S. is going to let this happen. And we are looking at aggression at the scale of World War III.
Right. And just before we get to that, let's not leave the hanging thread out there of the Kurds. Clearly, Turkey is not going to about face on the Kurds and say, oh, Kurdistan on the doorstep is a great thing. I mean, that can't be left out there. How does that play into this?
Oh, that's very important. Again, it's so hard for me to keep track of everything. That's another major point, because one of the reasons, there has been many reasons for the rift, even before this coup, as we know, U.S. declared overnight President Erdogan as evil and despot and dictator from the Man of the Year, Time Magazine Man of the Year, 2011, Time Magazine Man of the Year. He was the model for the entire Middle East. Bam! One night later, basically, it was, oh my God, he's a serial despot and dictator. So even before the coup, one of the main reasons for the rift and sticky points between the United States and Israel, let's not forget Israel here, and Turkey, has been the Kurds. So Turkey felt it was being screwed during Iraq war, okay, when we were going there, because this was when Israel actually established a base, an official base in northern Iraq, got full protection from U.S. military, in addition to its own commandos there in northern Iraq, in Kirkuk area. We don't see mainstream U.S. ever reporting on this, okay? So that whole Valley of Wolves that they aired, that documentary, that movie, that film they made was based on that. This was when the Turkish soldiers went and captured some Americans, you know? And the Americans came and captured some Turks and put some bags over their head. And nobody here explained what happened, because it's been a hush-hush situation. Israel and U.S., they like to play various pawns, but they've been playing the Kurds in Iraq for their use, okay? Once they are finished with Iraq, they let them hang dry. You know, they say, you know what, somebody can gas you, whether it's Saddam or whether it's Turkish president, we don't care. We are finished with the use. Well, the same scenario is playing out with Syria again, with Kurds. And again, you have Israel and U.S., while they are working with Turkey on one side, this is U.S., arming, training, and working with the Kurds. So this has been a major sticky point between Turkey and the United States and Israel. But in this case, I would say Russians are the ones who have the least invested. If you look at the history of the Kurdish population being used and then later discarded and abused. You see it for the past 100 years. It started with the British Empire. I mean, it started with the Brits. It was always play the faction, take advantage of the rift, okay, and then give them back to the wolf and say, now we are done with it. Go do as you wish. And yes, they have the, you know, that history is pretty clear there. But Russia hasn't had that kind of history. Yes, a good faction of Kurds during the Soviet Union era were identifying themselves as the socialists or communists, but Russia never played that active of a role with the Kurds, at least not with the wars and going and invading nations. With us, it's been always, you know, it's Iraq, using the Kurds in Iran, using the Kurds in Syria. I mean, Russia has never really gotten involved in that kind of expansion. So that alone, Russia can say, you know, meanwhile, I'm just saying, this is hypothetically, to Turkey, do what as you wish with the Kurds. We look the other way. You know, that can be a very simple agreement. We are not supporting or training them. But let's say if we are engaged in these exercises against Syria, you know, I mean, for Syria, protecting and the terrorism, counterterrorism measures. Meanwhile, if you want to go and gas some of them or kill them, we look the other way. Is it possible? I would say yes.
Okay, let's come back to the World War III scenario, because that's obviously pretty important. Now, the way that I see this is, I agree, I don't think NATO could possibly allow Turkey to just say, hey, see you later, guys. Oh, okay, you know, have fun, Turkey. Clearly, that's not going to happen. It's going to be something much, much different than that. It seems to me the most simple calculation here for NATO, the NATO side, is get rid of Erdogan, finish the job, get rid of him, put in someone more friendly, and make sure Turkey maintains its status in NATO. That would be the easiest way to chop off the head before anything happens. Now, clearly they're at a disadvantage at this point, because the earlier coup didn't quite go to plan. But it still seems like that would be the obvious way, and it would be very easy to see how they can spin public opinion onto that side, in the West at any rate, to say, look, we were getting rid of this despot who was cleaning house and, you know, getting... taking thousands and thousands of people out of, you know, his political enemies. It's very easy. I mean, he's obviously already been demonized and isolated in that sense. So that has to be the calculus at this point. Erdogan has to be expecting this. Where does that play out from here? And is there, I mean, what's the strategy on Erdogan's side? What's the strategy on NATO's side? How does Russia play into that?
Yes. The scenario you presented, James, absolutely I agree with you, but... that would be the case, because I already said, if this was a warm-up, the real coup is coming, because they want to finish President Erdogan. They want to install, as they have done with Egypt, everywhere, okay? It's not going to be nearly as easy, but it's not impossible, especially by winning through the mainstream media. These are people like NBC, the court of public opinion. The whole world who worshipped President Erdogan as the model for democracy, they started, you know, like Hitler said, you repeat any lie, anything 50 times, 100 times, it becomes a fact. And people are going to go and repeat it. That's exactly what we have been seeing. They don't, for example, if you were to put statistically the number of journalists jailed, tortured before President Erdogan in Turkey, which it was hush-hushed in the United States, and compare it to the numbers under President Erdogan, they would dwarf President Erdogan's, okay, clamping down on... It's only when they want to use it that they will put it under magnifier. So aside from that, what you say as a scenario, yes, especially using Incirlik base, that's why I find it plausible that there are activities, operations to remove these warheads, because right now it's Turkey's liability. Turkey is very smart. I mean, they know that they can use that as an excuse. Those bearded guy... This base, these nuclear warheads existed for over 50 years. They weathered Cold War, Soviet Union, communism, Iran's Ayatollah regime, with border being there, with Iraq, two Iraq wars. And now suddenly some guys with Shalwar are going to go there and take this, you know, these warheads and come out. But they know that it's liability, so they are, I believe, engaged in getting rid of it. It's like, come on, take your damn warheads, okay, out of here. Because we don't want to give you that. We want to preempt that excuse. Of course, that's smart. But with your scenario, there is a wild card that we need to consider. The wild card is Russia, and whether Russia is giving lip service to Turkey or if Russia is ready and determined to step in, you know, open its wing and say, I'll keep you under my wing. Because if and when Russia really implements what they are right now saying kind of mildly, saying, okay, let's make this military arrangement, we are allies, etc., get out of NATO, and we provide you with protection. Russians have been providing protection for Assad. Assad would have been gone 3 years ago had it not been for Russia. And the same thing, and if that were to be the case, no, we are not going to easily go there and eliminate President Erdogan and install a regime. And that's why I'm saying this is extremely important, because if we were to do that, then we are starting a global war. So I'm not just saying it as hyperbole, World War III is going to break. Not only this would happen, involve Turkey and Russia and Turkey's geopolitical, importance, it will also involve the domino effect. And I'm telling you, because Russians have been getting very close to Greece, Russians have been very active in the Balkans, they are very well aware of the court of public opinion in the Eastern European blocs, okay? It won't be limited to Turkey. In fact, if that happens, Turkey pulls out, you're going to see that just one by one, other nations saying, we want to pull out. And again, even under that scenario, you're not looking at a NATO that's going to sit back and say, okay, we should have been dissolved 20 years ago, but maybe this is the time to get dissolved. That's not going to happen. You're still looking at a confrontation. But with all that said, you and I have talked about this before, President Putin is truly a wild card, because he's very good in talk and flexing muscles. He has done some with Syria, but is he a kind of real, is he what who he says he is? And would he do that, or would it just step to the sideline and say, okay, how about this? You and, you know, NATO, you do this, and I will tell Turkey that, okay, they're on their own. Because Russia can play that as their own bargaining chip, too. We will do this with Turkey if you were to do this, and we won't do it and would leave them, you know, we will feed Turkey to the wolves, to you, if you do this. So what kind of bargaining chip Turkey would be for Russia? That's another question that we need to find an answer to.
Right. Well, I would agree with you on that, Sibel. I would think that Russia would benefit more from having Turkey as an ally versus having them taken over by, you know, continue to be an ally of NATO and the West. That's my own personal thought on that. But speaking of wild card, the U.S., I don't know if you guys have heard this, the United States is getting ready to send their top pit bull dog negotiator to Turkey next week. Vice President Joe Biden is going to be meeting with the Prime Minister and President Erdogan to discuss U.S.-Turkey relationships, supposedly, according to the White House. Now, I mean, how significant is this? I mean, it's laughable that Biden, really, in my opinion, but I mean, is Gulen going to be on the table, or what are they going to be talking about here?
Are you asking me to be an oracle again? You want to go first, James?
I probably won't have a much different response from you. I mean, obviously, I don't know what they're going to be discussing. Maybe a position for one of Biden's sons in the Turkish government if everything pans out well. But no, I mean, I don't think Biden is going to be... I mean, he's going to be a mouthpiece puppet for obviously much bigger powers. And I mean, Obama is a sitting duck president anyway. So, the changeover in the U.S. administration is another thing to take into account for this, because that brings in another layer of timetable to all of this that moves everything up in priority. I'm assuming that the U.S. wants to make whatever move, or the NATO bloc wants to make whatever move they want to make to ensure that this relationship continues, no matter who gets selected in the puppet selection in November. I'm sure they want to try to clear this up before then. So this is obviously a move towards that, but I mean, as to what kind of leverage Biden is going to have, there is going to be the other question, and who's going to be giving what ultimatums to who.
So if the United States is taking this seriously, which I'm sure it is, especially with the cozying relationship between Russia and Turkey, okay, and they say, whoa, we went so too far, okay, let's mend the relationship. How can we give certain things to President Erdogan, to Turkey, to, for them to save face, okay, to say, see, we won? Of course, in this case, Gulen, Fethullah Gulen, will become the bargaining chip. Now, we know that it's not going to happen because they cannot hand over Gulen. You are looking at the whole network. If I were to engage in prediction, I would say they would promise President Erdogan as okay, so we are bending backwards, so we, you know, forgive us, okay, let's just kiss and make up. We'll give you Gulen. It's going to take 2 to 6 months or 3 to 6 months to go through the appropriate court processing, because he's going to appeal. Because even if today, if they did the right thing, not that Gulen is the single, he's like a symbol guy, to say, okay, we're going to hand you to Turkey, right? Gulen has the right under legal U.S. laws to appeal that. And the appeal will go to court for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. They can drag it. Then whatever decision they come up with, it can still be appealed by either party. So they can drag the process for a year. Meanwhile, they have safe face for Turkey, you know, saying, well, we're going to give it to you. See, now he's fighting us. We want to give him to you, but he's fighting us. Meanwhile, Gulen most likely will die. And if I were to predict, especially right now with things heating up, with Turkey really active on its extradition request, my guess would be if there is a big, big, major chance that Fethullah Gulen, due to his ongoing illnesses that he's been inflicted with, diseases, he's going to die in the next couple of months, 1 month. Let's put 8 weeks time frame and say Gulen is going to die. They're not going to even ask for an autopsy, because that will basically quiet a lot of parties. Turkey says, well, they're only asking for Gulen. His network is $22 billion worth. He has tens of thousands of people working for him. They're not going to go anywhere, just Gulen, right? Well, Gulen dies, there is no case. Okay, he's dead, and U.S. was getting ready to extradite him anyway. That would be the likely thing. And meanwhile, this excuse of United States that Turkey hasn't fulfilled all the criteria to get this terrorist Gulen back to his nation and put him in jail. Look at the country that is saying this. This is the United States. This is the country that the White House sits in, that stupid Oval Office. It's Obama, right? And decides who's going to die with the drone assassination, even if they are U.S. citizens, right? This is the nation that goes to Sweden and says, we want you to hand over this, put them in these Gulf Streams, okay, under the name of terrorism, and take them to black sites. This is the nation that goes to Germany, captures people, takes them to Poland, puts them in the black sites, okay? Now, this is the nation that says, well, you know, we are for human rights and all the stuff. We are a land of law. So if you want this man, there's a lot of process you're going to go through. Turkey has says, okay, he's a terrorist. You have showed no proof and have captured and tortured and killed tens of thousands of people by just claiming they are terrorists. And then look at the hypocrisy of it. You know, I mean, that is itself, I know it's a side topic, but for U.S. to insist saying, no, we are not going to extradite because of this reason, coming from a nation that has been practicing nothing but destroying anything that is in any way related to human rights, is like the highest level of hypocrisy.
Well said. I think we're going to wrap this up here, unless either of you have any final comments you'd like to say.
Well, let me just take off my analyst hat for a second and put on my principled voluntarist hat and just say, to hell with all of them, to hell with every single one of these parasites that pretend to lord and rule over entire nations and play with peoples like they're their playthings. And I get that there's real strategies and real decisions that are going on, but it is my profound and true hope from the bottom of my heart that in future generations they will look back at these kinds of ridiculous playings with the world and laugh at the stupidity of people who put themselves in these positions and the creation of these giant blocks to counter the other giant blocks that are trying to rule over more and more people, and to hell with all the parasites. That's all I can say.
No, that right. was an excellent thing to say. And I'm going to take my analyst journalist hat off. And I'm going to put, because people have been accusing me of lately, I've been sounding more like activist than journalist when there's supposed to be these clear lines. So I'm going to put my activist hat on and say, we talked about Russia. We talked about President Erdogan and his administration. We talked about the United States. We talked about Assad government and Syria. But we didn't really talk about the people. And as always, people are being placed outside the equation as if they have nothing to say, as if they have no right to say anything or do anything. And that is wrong. What stopped that coup attempt in Turkey? What was it? It was the people. It were the people who came out and they put on a fight. They said, we're not going to bend over and take it. This is not 1980. It was the people. People can and they are able, can say, demand, and do things. Not always going and giving petition into their parliaments or to their Congress. In this case, everything that we are doing is not related or directed at Putin or Russian government or at President Erdogan's administration. It's directed to people around the world, including people in Turkey, okay? Look what Russia did, for example, to protect their interests, sovereignty, okay? I'm not saying it's for only best interests of the people. What they did was they illegalized all these Western Soros NGOs. They said, what? You are not going to operate within our borders. Get the F out, okay? Was it end of the world? No, they got out. They couldn't do anything. Right now, as we are talking about this, I know Turkey has rounded up a lot of people, some of them deservedly, most likely some of them are not. We don't know. We are not in there to be able to know about that. I know Gulen's network has penetrated within the academics and all this stuff. But as of now, right now, as we are recording this interview, this discussion here, this debate here, there are at least half a dozen George Soros-funded NGOs in Turkey, in Istanbul and in Ankara. Turkish people have the list of them. They get millions of dollars. They played their role during the whole thing in Ukraine. Turkish people should demand that these NGOs funded by George Soros get shut down. The foreign ones, because they're all CIA, the foreign ones, they get their visa. They go in there because that has been a front. That has been providing front for the CIA operatives. It used to be only embassies and attachés and consulates. It's now mainly NGOs, okay? And their names are great sounding, patriotic or transparency, truth. You know, you see those names, you know who's funding them? Ask President Erdogan, ask your security forces to shut down these NGOs, put them on the plane, deport them back right away. And if you do not get that, then you go get them out, put them on the plane, okay? Go to these NGOs headquarters, Soros NGOs headquarters, because people can do it. And I do not believe that Erdogan administration's police is going to stop them, because at this point, they know who are the dirty ones too. So if you are watching this, all it takes is several hundreds of determined Turks to say, we do not want George Soros meddling in our politics inside our nations. Go to their headquarters, go to their offices, put them on the plane, take them to the airport, deport them, shut down their NGOs. That's something you can do. If you truly believe, forget about what your media is saying there in Turkey or what your maybe parliamentarian is saying. If you look and you believe that the United States is acting as your enemy of what you want and what you select, then you demand or you go implement it, go shut down the consulates. Why should Turkey have all these United States consulates in its nation when the United States is saying, we do not respect your vote or your election, we're going to take your whoever is the leader you elected and we're going to plant someone that we want, and meanwhile cause all this death? Shut down the United States consulates. Ask if thou don't receive it, go do it. Okay, go do it. Same thing with the NATO bases. These Eastern Bloc, Balkan nations, they are in the same position. They can go and scream and tell their parliaments, look at their elected officials, they're all NATO's bastards, okay? They've been backed by NATO. If you know they're not going to do it, you go and shut down the NATO bases in your nation. If you really believe that is something you as community people need to do, just do it. And it's not... I mean, people say, oh my God, can you imagine that? You put tens of thousands of people, millions of people, you see what can be possible. This coup, this attempted coup failed, okay? Because of what people did, okay? Because people, they refused to sit home, hide under their beds and let it happen. So much other things can happen. Just do it. Be independent. Be self-reliant. Don't go with petitions. Don't go with some commentary sent to your mainstream media. Shut down Soros-funded NGOs. They all have the word transparency in them, okay? You see the word, the Turkish equivalent of it, transparency? You go shut them down, okay? That's what we need to do. That's what all these countries, all these people should be doing. And it's not impossible. It's not difficult. It doesn't have to be violent. You grab them, okay? Raise money, put them on the plane, send those trash garbage bags back to the Soros. They are his bastards anyway, okay? They are running it here. Just make them irrelevant. You can make them irrelevant and just forget everything. Take it upon your hand, make them irrelevant, and I will stop here.
Well, I want to thank both of you, James Corbett and Sibel Edmonds, Corbett of CorbettReport.com and SibelNewsBud.com. I definitely value and appreciate the information you guys share time and time again, and I know our viewers do as well. So definitely we're all going to be keeping a close eye on this whole situation, I'm sure, and a lot more developments to come. Till next time, this is Spiro reporting for NewsBud.